You're listening to the Own the Build podcast, where each week, Paul Hemming from Sealink interviews experts on how SME developers and contractors can transform their business through intelligent construction management.
Hello, and welcome to episode 36 of the Own the Build podcast. With me, Paul Hemming, and Liam Curley. How are you doing, Liam?
I'm great, Paul. How are you?
I've never, in the 5 years of knowing you, heard such a response. You're great.
Yeah.
I know, listeners, you're probably starting to get a bit of a sense of the man after 36 episodes, but I've never heard him say he's great. So
I've not been in all 36, as you like to point out regularly.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so you're great because you're back. Is that what it is?
I don't think I am back. I haven't gone anywhere for a few episodes, but nonetheless, I am great. Yeah.
Well, what I have to say, I am surprised that you're here, because our guest today, I feel like the two of you may have had a falling out, because whenever he's been on, you've been avoiding the place.
Oh, don't. Who is it? Who we got? Don't stop. Oh no, who is it?
I'm afraid. You know who's back. Today we welcome back our best friend on the show, Pirigash of Totem Finance. How's it going, Pirigash?
Hi guys. Yeah, really good. Really good.
So what did you do to patch it up with Liam? Because A, he's here, and B, he's great, so it must have been pretty good what you did.
I'm still not convinced he's real, to be honest with you.
Definitely not when he said he's great.
No, I mean, there's plenty of things. Technology, it blows me away. I could be a bot. You know, you see all sorts of things going on nowadays.
No. Even a bot could not be as deadpan. I refuse to believe that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good point.
Took the words right out of my mouth there, Pirigash. 100% agree with that. How's business going, Pirigash? How's things?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, to be honest, coming off a summer break, I think, like everyone, you know, the last 18 months going through coronavirus, various lockdowns, it's been incredibly disruptive. And the genuine business feeling that I get is that people are raring to go. Of course, you know, for a lot of my clients in the construction industry, developers, they've not really stopped. But I think with the end of stamp duty now, I think the market is again open to developers. As opposed to maybe just property investors. So, yeah, we're very much raring to go.
And are you working on any cool projects at the moment?
The biggest probably is a personal one, is trying to grow Totem Finance itself. We're bringing on four new salespeople whose job really is to get much closer to the developer and really understand kind of the conversations that we have on the podcast. It's not just about the funding, it's all the other elements. And trying to get closer so that we can ensure the funding is not just about one moment, but it meets a developer's needs in total.
Excellent. Sounds very, very exciting. And for everyone who is new to the show, Pirigash is a genuine expert in all things to do with development finance. He's always fun to have on the show, and he's the funnest purely because he always comes up with his own episode titles. So today's episode title, what have you got for us, Pirigash? What have you got in that pocket of yours?
Today it's The Swamp Thing, Is He Real? which I'm hoping, we're going to be talking about ESG today and, you know, the environment, social, governance. But is it real? You know, is it something that's important to developers? Should it be important to them? Is it important in the finance world, etc.?
Amazing. Always come up with absolute belters. So you mentioned ESG, so you're talking about environmental social governance. It sounds it's a very corporate term, isn't it? So give us an introduction to the topic as you see it, Pirigash.
So this is a topic that's been growing, I think, since the turn of the century, you know, since the year 2000. I think we're all aware, everyone on the planet's aware that the planet's getting warmer, our conditions are becoming more difficult to live. There's floods, etc. But also, I think there's a real pushback. You know, we had a lot of pushback against capitalism and the way in which it approaches governance, who we treat, communities, all of these sorts of things. And really, this is a movement of a, you know, it's a broad brush umbrella, which captures a lot of minute movements within the market. But it's a way of doing good, but it's also a way of holding companies to account. There are some fascinating, you know, movements in terms of where funds, well, I think it's fascinating anyway, in terms of where funds are going, etc. And I think it's, you know, for a developer sitting at home, an SME developer, they may be sitting there saying, what is this? Come on, guys. You know, what does this really mean? All I really want to do is my first development. But actually, from the materials you're trying to source to what your end buyer is now going to ask for. And dare I say, tenant, you know, you may have a tenant in the future in 5-10 years. They're going to say, actually, I'd love to rent here. What's the net carbon footprint of the house? And you're going to take a double take. And you're going to take a double take, say, what? You know, are you sure?
Yeah. Go on. No, definitely. It's interesting that you say what our tenants interest in, what our buyers interest in. We had on 2 weeks ago on the show, we had Jonathan Vashnu from Dash Homes, and we were talking about, he's an architect, very focused on, he's an engineer, they're an architectural practice, very focused on sustainable construction. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, Liam, but I think it was 82% of buyers now said that they were willing to pay more for a sustainable home. So for sure, there is a tangible move towards it. And at the end of the day, we're all kind of in it together, aren't we? We all want a nice place to live, don't we? So it's definitely something that's becoming more and more important. Before we go into how it affects development finance, how is it impacting funding generally? You said you were fascinated. There were some very interesting aspects to how it's impacting funding generally. How do you see it impacting the world of funding generally?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the really interesting thing for me is that companies are now having to report on their ESG impact. The flow of funds are moving towards companies that are more sustainable. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, it's just good, right? So back in 2000, it was like, invest in good companies, that's just good for everyone. But actually, the hard-nosed people would look at returns and say, yeah, but stick with the oil majors, stick with the banks, stick with X, because that's where your pension is, and etc. But the really interesting aspect is ESG-related companies seem to be returning a much more improved return. So actually doing good pays. And at the same time, so there was a study done by a research company, and it said the return is kind of like an extra 2% annually, which over time is huge, right? And at the same time, we're now seeing the amount of assets flowing in every year to fund managers that have an ESG angle, you know, topping 60 billion. So these are not inconsequential numbers now. And what's really funny is I feel like the equity markets will lead the conversation here. People with spare cash, fund managers, all of those guys need cash. Now, the interesting thing is, where does that cash now go to? And often it ends up in our banks. It ends up in funds, debt funds. And those debt funds are now going to have to justify whether they should receive money from these funds that have an ESG angle. So it's all connected, you see. But the biggest wave, the biggest movement, I think, is happening at the equity level. And I think that will trickle down into where debt sits. And often then, you know, as we'll go on to later, will start to impact the debt funding market.
And it also makes sense, going back to your point, that doing the right thing, having a social environmental conscience in everything that you do, actually does increase your margins, makes things better. Because that, again, going back to Jonathan Fashionu's point about that 82% of people are willing to pay more for the right thing, kind of indicates that it's no longer, through these conversations that we've been having, we've been talking about sustainability on and off over the last few months with different people from different angles. It does seem like everyone is no longer like a buzzword. It's no longer kind of we're doing it for the sake of doing it. In mentality, at least, people are genuinely willing to go that extra mile and actually take it seriously. I think just because of everything that's happening in the world at the moment, focusing the mind. But moving on then, so tell me about, we've talked about funding, the funding world generally, where there's much more exposure to ESG. How does that then trickle down into our lovely little niche, which is development and development finance in your case?
So I think what we're starting to find, there's already a couple of lenders who are actually uniquely pricing things differently, if you can believe that. So if a deal has a genuine sustainable angle, and you know, often the angle is the bit that's for debate, and how rigorous that angle is, because who's to say who's right now? But as long as it has that angle, you can get more leverage. So that means instead of, you know, needing to find 200K, maybe you only need to find 100K. So the bank will give you more money because your project is more sustainable. And additionally, they're also pricing it differently. So you're actually also getting it cheaper because of that. And why are they able to do that? Well, one of the reasons is because they can get cheaper funding from the equity market if their project is environmentally sound. So that's making the link to our previous topic. So that's genuinely happening today. Anecdotally, though, apart from what I see as a forward-thinking lender, we're getting many more questions about the type of build from an environmental perspective, the social audience for the housing perspective, than we did before. I'm not saying the level of DD or due diligence is as high as it is, say, for to understand your build costs.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
still about money.
World, yeah, exactly. It's a world of difference, but the questions are being asked. And this is the thing I would talk to people at home about, is when you're a developer, how different are you really? I mean, genuinely, because it's bricks and mortar. So how different are you? How different is a Barrett's home versus a David Wilson home versus a Taylor Wimpey home versus, you know, in the SME space, often we have more entrepreneurial flair. So the place tends to be a bit bigger, tends to be a bit higher spec, all those things. But again, how different are you? And I think the question really is, do you want to be someone that treats the ESG movement as a competitive advantage? Right? Not only am I going to do it because I know it's coming, but I'm going to be so far off the scale, the best, a bit like, you know, maybe it's an unfair example, but a bit like Elon Musk. Everyone knew electric cars were coming. He got in there early, bold enough, and now his market cap is equivalent to the rest of the car market together. Wow, did they miss a beat?
Yeah, well, it's you're going to get Liam. You're getting Liam on the edge of his seat here now about positioning. He's going to, but this is maybe an interesting angle. We've got a guy from the finance world here. We've got a guy from the marketing world here. And we're talking about development. We're talking about SME developers. How can the whole focus of this podcast, how can we do things differently to give ourselves an edge for the listeners? So that is an interesting angle, isn't it? Because we were talking a few weeks ago, weren't we, Liam, when, believe this or not, Pirig, actually it pained me to even allow this, but I interviewed Liam as our expert a few weeks ago. Pain, it didn't feel right, but you know, every now and again you have to do these things. But we talked about positioning from a subcontractor perspective.
And we mentioned Tesla.
I feel like you guys are the same person after all. You're right. So that's an interesting angle, isn't it, Liam? Because about maybe the positioning.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that. Let me just ask a question before that, though, is, so anecdotally, Pirigash, what kind of angles have you kind of, any of your clients or anyone you know, come up with good angles in this sense?
In the round, I would say most people are taking incremental steps because, and this is the thing, right? The thing about Elon Musk is he could afford to take a risk. People don't often know this, but he's a trust fund kid. He was not short of a few bob. If you're an SME developer, do you want to try something that's maybe untested in terms of going out and really creating a market? It's really difficult. What I would say is all the developers we work with are looking into detail, whether it's adding ground pumps, adding solar, being innovative with the way they're building. We've got some guys who are very much building passive house system builds, which, you know, we'll talk a bit later, remind me when we talk about EPCs. But, you know, again, I think it's all about finding the bit that you're comfortable with. But at the same time, I've got to say, one of our clients is, as part of their development, have built the first, you know, carbon neutral microgrid as part of their development in the UK. SME, being bold as you like. But guess what? You know, they had a massive waiting list on people who wanted to get on their development, because they paired Paul, just to finish, they paired their environmental bit with a social community aspect. And together, it proved a marketer's dream.
If you think about the positioning and the opportunity, so if you take Tesla, I mean, Tesla weren't first in regards to, there was already a kind of movement with the Prius, which, all right, was a hybrid, but it was kind of being talked up as electric anyway. And they could see that they were high wealth individuals were driving that Prius, not because it was luxury, but because of what it represented. And he recognized the opportunity in the market. And you can see that right now with regards to the movement here with plant-based food and all sorts of other things, that there is a huge movement. So the movement, it's already proven that individuals are open to spending more money. And the opportunity for a smaller developer is they don't need to sell 200 units in Liverpool. They don't need to find 200 people that are willing to pay an extra £50,000 for a home that's positioned as environmentally friendly or green. They need to find 10 people who are prepared to pay that. So actually the opportunity is for the smaller developer to say, okay, well, yeah, let's take that position. We'll be the company that puts together this story that we're going to provide luxury apartments that are the most environmentally friendly apartments you can buy in this area.
And not only does that give you a wonderful position to sell your product, but it also, by the sounds of it, Pirogash, gives you a far improved position to borrow and to leverage potentially with development finance. And let's talk more about that after this break.
Own to Build is brought to you from our sponsor, Sealink, software used by developers and main contractors to manage subcontract procurement in one place. Find subcontractors, automate tenders and contracts, control construction program, compare prices, and improve project profitability with Sealink. To find out more, head to c-link.com. Now back to the show.
So we've talked about positioning. We've talked about the fact that people are willing to pay more money for these sustainable homes. I was doing a little bit of research into energy performance certificates, would you believe it, EPCs, and in the run-up to this show. And in the first quarter, so the assessments for EPCs are banded from A to G, A being very good and very sustainable, in inverted commas, G being less so. In the first quarter of 2021, 90% of buildings constructed were A to B. So almost every building being built is being built to a sustainably good, very good or good standard, effectively. So with that in mind, and given the context of this conversation about ESG, it does feel a little bit like we're already in a place where we're building sustainable homes. So my feeling is that where people are looking for a genuine sustainable angle, which was your quote from lenders, they're going to lend to properties with a genuine sustainable angle. How do you get that genuine sustainable angle, considering what I've just mentioned about EPC and the 90% of them hitting the mark?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd say is this is all brand new, right? You know, we're not talking about types of concrete that we should be using in the foundation. We're talking about something that's evolving massively. There's old technologies, there's new technologies. But something, again, that I'd like to take from the fund management business, which is, you know, bad companies or companies that are supposedly bad from an ESG perspective, or sectors like oil and gas, like, I don't know, other polluting industries, haven't disappeared. What's happened is people are supporting those that are making the most effort in order to grow. So when we talk about EPCs and standards, I think the first thing to say is this is the Wild Wild West. Okay. No one really knows what the rules are. Everyone's figuring it out for themselves. The sheriff is not quite in town, you know, and so for us, therefore, it may be someone being really brave in the SME space in order to win. But what I would say is, even if you're not that brave, just doing what you can, making the maximum out of it, will allow you to position yourself in a sector which traditionally has had a bad reputation as one of the good ones. And just by doing that, you're going to get early credibility from lenders, you're going to get early credibility from investors, and most importantly, you're going to get early credibility from buyers. And if you can get credibility along that line, it doesn't really matter what the future holds. You're going to suddenly be the sheriff and you're going to be dictating what the rules are, because people will be following you and what you intend to do. As far as EPCs concerned, I think, you know, again, I'm not an engineer, so anyone listening, you know, who knows more,
don't hammer
please,
him.
please write in, tell me what's what.
But write to me, I'll deal with them. And
yeah, exactly.
keep them flowing. I've got plenty, actually, from the previous episode.
Oh, really? Brilliant. So something like Passive House, you know, a system that's been around, massively popular in Scandinavia and Canada. It's all about not what you're adding, but the quality of the materials, the materials itself, how it's been sourced, means that you genuinely don't need to heat your house very much, either to make it hotter or even to make it cooler. And that's about great design. Now, it's not particularly new. It can be expensive to put together. But if you compared a passive house system and certain houses with, say, the addition of solar or PV, what you might find is the solar house is rated A, but the passive house is rated C. Now, for me, that's a mockery of the system. And it's also one of the reasons why everyone's waiting to see what works, because the worst thing we could do is put billions and billions of pounds supporting something that appears to be great because of regulation. And I think the regulation, if I'm honest, and I'd love to ask your view, Paul, as a construction person, and you, Liam, is it feels like the regulations are more about bringing the minimum standard up than creating a genuine benchmark that we should all strive for.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would say that you're probably correct there, because what the government and the regulators are trying to achieve with building regs is to avoid complete disaster, i.e. what happened at Grenfell. Clearly they didn't even hit that bar, right? So that is, the regulations are there to stop disaster. I don't think it's there to allow you to strive for more. It's there to make sure you're doing the bare minimum effectively. But I'm actually really quite fascinated by this conversation, because clearly there's all of these moves way, way above where I feel we sit, where the SME developer sits, with all of these funds, and there's funds going into the right thing. And we've talked about how you can get better borrowing. You can lend, you can borrow much better, much more efficiently if you're a developer by doing this. You can position yourself. Liam's chipped in with a really good point there. You can position yourself in a certain way so that actually long term your business is, it's going to be a lot more attractive to buyers, etc. So all of that makes sense. And this it does make you feel like this shouldn't be a box-ticking exercise for developers anymore. It should really be something that you focus and craft your business around. What advice are you giving to your clients, Pirogash, about this?
So the first thing is to let everyone know early. There's no point doing a development and at the nth hour thinking, oh, I'll add this green thing and call it green. Because it can cause issues for lenders if it's a new piece of technology or if it's something they've not funded before. You know, there will be someone that will want to fund it, but it may take longer. So if it's central to you, to your strategy and your vision, it's more likely you're going to be able to communicate it better, which means it's easier for a lender to digest. And if it's new tech, understand how you're comfortable. So whether it's because it's encompassed in a warranty scheme already, or, you know, has been used perhaps in a different way in an old industry. You know, any of these things are things that are going to give lenders more comfort. Otherwise, if it's completely new, you know, unfortunately, you're in the realms of equity and you know, more expensive funding.
And before we go on, then, you said there if it's central to their strategy. So if sustainability, and that's a big term, but let's just say sustainability is a term. If a developer comes to you where sustainability is central to their strategy, given the current climate, are you licking your lips thinking, this is great, that's the thing that I'm going to lead the conversation with in the lending market? Is it that serious?
No, okay. I wouldn't say we're there that yet. And if we were, you would be far too late. As we described before, this is at the inception of this movement. And the real debate for the people at home is, do you want to lead it? Do you want to be the first one to have created the Tesla, or are you going to follow afterwards and just use it as an add-on? Do you want, this can be a competitive advantage. I'm not saying in the very early days, of course, it'll be tough, you know, especially if you've never built in that method or anything like that. That's something that you may need to think about. So it's not yet, oh my God, every lender's falling over themselves. But if it's a tricky case, I may be starting to think, you know, can I speak to the sustainable person within the bank to ask them whether this gains some leeway in their area? Maybe there's some grants that might come in to offset some of the risk that's coming in. But certainly, if someone's more sustainable, then genuinely, it is a point of difference that there isn't on my application form right now.
Okay. So yeah, we are still at this early stage with regards to getting the finance.
I think just chipping in with that, if we skip the Tesla conversation, because we're talking about SMEs, so we're not talking about, the technology's already there, right, for really sustainable construction, all right, and it comes in all sorts of different forms, whether it's the way in which you build, the materials that you build, the technology that you use to plan the construction. So it's already there. Developer isn't inventing that. They're just pulling it all together. I would say if I were a developer, I would be doing it right now. No question whatsoever. I would say this is an opportunity for an SME developer. And developers, I don't think, are very good at positioning, because most of them will say, my position is high-end residential. That's not a position, because everyone else is saying that. Everyone thinks that their property is beautiful. And everyone that's building in Balham is building high-end residential. Whereas if you say, okay, I'm going to build a genuine position as the sustainable developer in Balham. And a lot of it is about the story that you tell, right? And it's about packaging your brand, right? And I would say it's about being smart as well with what you incorporate into your into the first project, the early project. So you can incorporate elements of construction, materials, whatever, you can pick them. We don't need to focus on what they are. You can incorporate things that are green or that appear really green, like a green roof, or you know, with not just sedum but with wildflowers and things like that. It looks great on a brochure without going too high risk, right? So you don't want to incorporate anything that's really not being done, because then that could put off a lender, I guess. And you want to build that portfolio of projects, get those under your belt, and then kind of dripping in the more innovative, edgy things where you really are.
Yeah. But it's also obviously with the construction angle, that the infrastructure is the supply chain, having that supply chain to deliver this, in inverted commas, sustainable construction. That's all things you got to think about. But the point being here is that, and it's funny that we come at it from a finance angle with you, Pirogash, the point is quite clear, isn't it? Longer term, you're going to be able to make the numbers work much more simply. You're going to have better opportunities from finance, from lenders. You're also going to, we're already seeing this growing demand for selling your products for a higher price if you do it as well. So whether or not you do it, there's many different ways to skin the cat, isn't there? It's just something that longer term developers should really be looking towards, right?
And one other thing, Paul, to mention that Ian had mentioned in one of the previous podcasts about BIM, is if you're using certain technology, you can reduce wastage, which is going to reduce your costs. And if you can show that you've got a clear plan because you're using the technology, which is going to reduce the cost and is going to give you more a less risky program, is going to reduce insurances. Again, it's going to reduce costs with lenders, I guess, if there's more data behind your program and you can lay it out.
We're really getting somewhere with all of this, aren't we? I mean, episode 36, we've got there where it's all starting to piece together wonderfully well, isn't it? To be honest with you, Pirogash, I'm sorry that you give it Liam an inch and he'll take a mile. He's going to be positioning that every single episode now that I gave him his soapbox to stand on a few weeks ago. That's really interesting though, isn't it? I've got a real feeling now that the medium to long-term future for developers, particularly SME developers who can do it, has got to be a shift to thinking about these things seriously.
Yeah, I think the other thing I would add is that it's not all high-end. You know, I mean, when you look at the amount of affordable houses that's got to be built, but especially because a lot of those are JVing with local councils, etc., there's an opportunity for many more uses of modern construction methods, which is perhaps more difficult in the private rental sector. And, you know, again, ticking the sustainability box there is going to help you win major contracts with the council, because those guys are definitely going to be targeted again on the ESG impact of every contract they make.
100%. So any developers listening, you know what to do. And also, if you want to listen to another interesting podcast, number 32, episode 32, positioning, in all seriousness, we'll give you some, it's a really interesting episode to think about what we've discussed here in the context of being a SME developer. So Pirogash, as always, you don't just deliver episode titles, you deliver episodes. What a man. No, thanks very much for coming on. And I will be putting Pirogash's details, as always, and Totem's details in the podcast description. Anyone who keeps on reaching out to me and saying, Paul, Pirogash is great, isn't he? Pirogash would love to hear from you as well, I'm sure. So do drop him a line. So that's everything for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Liam, I will see you next week. There's no getting away from it. And Pirogash, we will definitely see you soon. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Thanks, Pirogash.
Cheers, lads.